Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly?
It is the Savage Nation. It's summertime, so playing some music from the eras, Bob Dylan, at this time. Go say it already. He's too slow for this time and age, you know? Pre-crack. I mean, really think about it. People are all stoned. How could this have ever been exciting? How did this move women to tears or whatever? Or turn it off, sorry. I mean, he was like a poet, whatever, bard. So there's an article out today, a welcome to the Savage Nation. Yeah, we'll talk about the communist revolution that you're witnessing, it's like a slow communist revolution right in front of your eyes. It's actually a fast communist revolution in front of your eyes. But apparently not too many people see what Obama is and what he's doing. Who knows if this will be stopped? God only knows where this can end up. I found another provision in one of the healthcare bill where the government can send people into your home and force you to and they will vaccinate your child against your will. Oh, they won't do it in that way. It's a demonstration program to send perhaps gangbangers with medical bags and needles in their bag to inject your child with, pertussis vaccine. But anything might happen with this healthcare bill because no one's read it. Then you got the genius Joe Biden who says the country's going bankrupt, but we have to spend money as fast as we can to keep from going bankrupt. What? We have to destroy the village in order to save it, Joe? It gets crazier by the second. It gets crazier by the second under this group of imposters. It's unbelievable to me. Wisconsin has the coldest July day since 1900. North Dakota farmer says Al Gore should be out here. We're living in Alice in Wonderland with the dumbest, most corrupt people in history running America into the ground and off the cliff. You understand this? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about, what's going on, how this happened? Liberalism is a mental disorder, and it led America to this point. And it's only just begun under this con man. It's unbelievable. This is only less than 6 months. And look already what a man's trying to do. Take a look at the losers running things. Take a look at none of them have run a business. Not one of them has met a payroll. And they just spend money in order to make money. They have no idea what they're talking about. If you did that, you'd be broke. You'd be out of work. Your business would fail. You'd have to fire everybody. Welcome to big government. 1-800-449-8255. I don't even want to get excited over any of it. Could you play instead of that version, could you play the woman who sang it, who I met in the elevator in the Green Street garage 30 years ago before she became a psychic? That's right, that one. I don't know about her name. She did a better job. I know, Joe. She did a better version. He wrote it, right? All right, another Pied Piper led millions of people off the cliff of insanity. Turn that off, too. How about Pantera? Let's get some hard metal, heavy metal playing here. I haven't done that in a while on Savage Nation. Nothing's moving me. What's wrong with me today? Try Rammstein. Let's see if that does anything for me on the Savage Nation. Since no one cares about communism in America, I'm going to play. That's better. Now, why does that move me? Loud as a man.
Deine Größe macht mich klein. Du
Nachash Klein. I like that. Big is good. Comes to heavy metal, I'm a, shall I say, sound queen. Why is that funny? I don't know. It struck me as funny. As funny as Patrick Cameron in LA, the ballet costume. About as funny as Jackie Mason pumping iron. I mean, come on.
Bestrafe mich. Bestrafe mich.
Be as funny as Ann Coulter playing Martha Washington.
Und ich denk, nein.
Anyone like January Jones in Mad Men?
Before
she's like Grace Kelly. How does anyone have a name like January Jones? I can't remember. It's like a radio name, January Jones. What's your name, January? Hello? Stunning. But, all right, turn it off already. I'll talk about anything other than politics. I can't take it anymore. And the reason I can't take it is because you've got criminals and gangsters running America, and you actually don't even know it. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. You actually listen to a word they say, and you don't know who they are, what they're doing? It's unbelievable. You don't read it. You didn't read It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis, so you don't know that there's a gang that has taken over America. I read it to you once before. It went over your heads, under your heads, under your feet, in your arms, you know, in the T-zone. It hit you in the T-zone, and you let it go right through you. Should I read it again? Nah, I don't think it matters. I think it's over. I think it's all over, basically. I see 20 years from now, everyone playing checkers, houses unplugged from the grid. In other words, Cuba. All 50 states sort of like a Cuba. No economy. Houses that are fading. No paint on the houses. No services. Spies on every block. Answering only to Obama and his SA. And anyone who speaks out is either taken to a prison camp or shot, disappeared. And you wouldn't even care because at that point it'll be too late. No one will be left to say a word. That's where this leads. He's a young man yet. Remember that. The old communists that he used to get into power will be gone. And they're rather moderate compared to him. This guy's an extremist, in my opinion. Maybe I should read for you Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here about the nightmarish vision of a future in America where a right-wing party emerges that takes over America. But everything he said about a dictatorship arising from the right did not happen. But now we have a tyranny of a dictatorship that has arisen under Barack Hussein Obama. And since it's only 6 months into it and they're doing it rather, you know, boiling pot method, you know, you don't even see what's happening here. The big linchpin here is the health care thing. If he gets away with this, it's over. He will control you from the cradle to the grave, and you will be dependent upon the government from cradle to grave for your medication and for your medical care. And at that point, the economy, I would say this represents not one-seventh of the economy, because there are no limits on what people can demand from the system, and because this communist government will want to expand their power and control through the medical system, it could become 30% of GDP to pay for this. So it could be one-third of the economy devoted to health care. Federal costs will actually drive up the cost of health care. So if I made these points yesterday, and if you learn today that Obama makes private medical insurance illegal, which it does, came out in Investor's Business Daily, what more do you need to know? Sotomayor should have been stopped. She divided America racially. She's racially divisive. She also took the side of the, if you remember, the Puerto Rican situation. It was a big deal. But there's no question that Sotomayor is unqualified. Let's put aside her politics. The woman is not at the level of a Supreme Court justice. Liberal or conservative, you want a judicial excellence and eloquence, right? Where is it in her? Where is it? It's like a Maoist judge. They took someone from the lower ranks of a court, and they said, well, now you're going to be a justice on the Supreme Court because we need to make the Supreme Court, you know, a little more communistic. So I was reading about Bob Dylan for a minute. That's why I started with Bob Dylan. I was on one of the websites, and it said, I don't know, something about Jimmy Carter once liked Bob Dylan's music. Then Bob Dylan was so fed up with himself because of the drugs and the womanizing that he converted from Judaism to Christianity. And then once he became a Christian, he stopped using drugs and having fun. And then Jimmy Carter didn't like him anymore, which makes no sense because Jimmy Carter's like a fanatic religious guy, isn't he? With snakes and everything. Doesn't he like wave snakes and drink strychnine, which explains his politics? It like baked away his neurons, took the side of Chavez, takes the side of Ahmadinejad, hates Israel, hates the Jews. It must be from the strychnine that he drank. But the going back, in other words, what I'm saying is that how could that be true? Why would Jimmy Carter, who's a fanatic religious guy, not like Bob Dylan after he converted to Christianity? And the article wasn't completely true because about 15 years ago, Dylan went back to being a Jew and he became like, you know, more religious. I don't know. That's because maybe he wanted to use drugs again and womanize. I don't understand that part of it. He used drugs and he womanized while he was Jewish. And then he got fed up with it, so he became a Christian. He didn't use drugs and womanize while a Christian. But then what, he wanted to use drugs and womanize again, so he went back to Judaism? Isn't that kind of an insult to his religion? I don't, can't follow that conversion. It says, like, you're allowed to do that? I must have missed that in the Old Testament. Where did it say that you can use drugs and womanize in the Old Testament? But it doesn't say that in the New Testament. The whole thing doesn't make sense. But it led me to a question for my audience today, since it's summer and you're not interested in anything, which is this. Have any of you left your religion, whatever it may have been, and gone to another religion? Hold it now. Hold it. And then gone back to your original religion, and why? It's a more of an essay question than a short answer. The short answer question would be, have any of you left your religion and gone to another one? The answer is yes or no. Yes, fine, not interesting. The essay question is, have any of you left your religion of your parents and of your birth, gone to another religion, and then gone back to your original religion, and why? Now you got an essay question, and you can call 1-800-449-8255 because I have a migraine, and that's what I'd rather talk about. I'll be right back. Savage.
Since you have to take it easy, and he's going to give you a prescription, he'll be back tomorrow.
I want my own doctor. Fly him in from Miami. Don't trust a doctor. Can't speak English.
My sentiments exactly. I don't trust a doctor who can't speak English. Well, get used to it, because if you've been in an emergency room recently, it's like the Tower of Babel. You try to find somebody you can talk to. You don't know whether to pull out prayer beads or wave a feather around. You don't know what's going on in there today. That's, of course, the famous scene from Godfather, where he's in Havana, and the Maya Lansky character has like a heart thing, and he wants a doctor, and they sent him a Spanish doctor from Cuba, and he says, I don't trust any doctor who can't speak English. It's unbelievably funny. Which is not to say that he's not right. I mean, have you been in a hospital recently? It's frightening. It's like Dostoevsky lately, hospitals. That's why I say the whole system is screwed up. The best and the brightest don't go into medicine anymore. It's true that they did in my generation. I mean, really, some bright kids went into medicine. Really smart kids. I wouldn't say the best necessarily or the brightest, but really smart kids. It was tough to get through medical school and pass the exams. But today, have you looked at what's going on? It's frightening. It really is unbelievable to me. The level of medical care has already fallen to a low level. I wouldn't say that we're still on the highest level in the world. Yes, you can still find it in this country if you're willing to shop for it and you have the money to pay for it. But what's coming next is going to take us down not one rung, but many rungs. But that's why I want to talk more about the religion thing. It was very intriguing to me. Like, what religion you were born in, then you became something else, and did you go back, and why? I think it's an interesting question. So I'm going to take a few of those calls. And then after that, we're taking the break. And in the third segment of this hour, I'm going to play. Many of you flooded us with a request for yesterday's opening, where I went nuts railing against communism in America under the Obama administration and how they're deceiving you. And I can't repeat it again, but I'm going to play it again, Sam. But let's take the callers as they're lined up. Chicago, Tom, go ahead, please. Religion. Born a what?
Yeah, I was a Christian, then I became a Buddhist, and now I'm back to my Christian roots.
How long were you a Buddhist?
I was a Buddhist for about 4 years, and I realized I was doing it for the wrong reasons, and I used to watch libs going to Thai restaurants, and it drove me nuts the way they acted. I said, I'm not going to be a part of this anymore, and I felt more comfortable going back to my Christian roots.
Well, you mean you suggested all liberals who go in Chinese restaurants are Buddhists?
No. I've heard you talk about how when libs go into...
Oh, yeah, they bow or they put their hands together and give a little curtsy when they want a napkin or a glass of water. The guy looks at them like they're nuts.
Exactly, and when I did it, and I'm a conservative, but when I did it, I realized after a few years I was doing it for the wrong reasons.
Wait, I'm mixed up. You're saying you became a Buddhist to get better Chinese food?
No, I became a Buddhist because I was reading books on it, and I was attracted to it, but at the same time...
The fact is that I'll tell you the truth. I never became a Buddhist, but I've read Buddhist literature, the sutras. It's beautiful poetry. And, you know, it's universalist, and many of their writings are universalist. You'll see it transcend any religion. It's commonsensical.
Yes, but then I realized...
Right, but you don't have to be... Here's my point. You can read another religion's writings, but you don't have to become a practitioner of that religion in order to adhere to those teachings, because it will only lead you back to your own religion if you read your own religion more carefully.
Yes. Yes, I agree, but it took me a few years to figure that out.
But what made you originally become a Buddhist?
I think maybe I was in a rebellious stage where I was...
It was the women. Come on. Most of them had no bras, and it was the patchouli oil. I know, but you don't want to admit it.
It was the tie dyes.
It was the whole thing. You thought you'd get lucky, but it didn't work. All right. So there it is. I remember I was at a hotel in Kauai 15 years ago, and the children were young. I stayed in a room, and they had the books. They used to have in every hotel room a Gideon Bible in America, right? Today, even in the hotel chains that are owned by Christians, there's no Gideon Bible. It's pay-per-view pornography to show you the degenerate nation we live in. Okay, the pornographers have so penetrated our society that every hotel room, instead of having a Gideon Bible for those horrible moments in the middle of the night, they have pornography available in little liquor bottles. Any wonder the country's elected Obama? The people are so stoned and dissipated from porno and alcohol that you have these utter clowns and incompetence ruining America. I would say if they had a Bible for people to reach upon, perhaps we would still have a president we could count upon.
Savage.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Mathe ki bindiya, tum hai sanu.
Well, we're going from politics to religion today, because if you really want to make people angry, you may as well talk about religion and politics. Mom taught me never to talk about politics or religion, how wrong she was. The fact of the matter is, you want to, you know, attract people's attention, you got to talk about politics and religion. Since I normally talk about politics and not religion, occasionally I will read from the Bible, I think today is a good day to talk about a little bit about religion. That's why turn it off already with the DDD. I've given up on Indian food. I haven't had it for months. I can't eat it anymore. And the reason is because they use the lunch buffet food at night when you come in for dinner. I mean, it's $8.95 all you're going to eat for lunch, right? You come back at night, you figure the same smiley guy is going to be there. It's the same salad, rehashed tandoori chicken. You're better off buying a Safeway chicken for $8.95 and heating up potatoes. Anyway, so to go back to the religion thing, I asked the question, you know, if you were one religion and then went into another and then went back to your original religion, why? It's an interesting, it's a transition a lot of people go through. Does it matter? I mean, you know. Is it an interesting question to you? I would think it is. If you listen to another person talk about it, like you were born Jewish and you became this, then you went back to Judaism. Or you're born Christian, you became this, then you went back to that. Why? Why'd you do that? North Carolina James, what was your religious passage about?
When I was 14, I read The Naked Ape by Desmond Morris, and I became an atheist. And then
you became an apeist or an atheist?
An atheist.
Because I read The Naked Ape, and I didn't become an ape.
No, I became an atheist.
Why? Because it was a very interesting book, and I did read it. I was a little older, but you're saying it's because he convinced you that we were nothing but the origin of species and the descent of man, and there was no God.
Yes.
Okay, then what happened?
A few years later, I converted to Judaism at the age of 22.
Wait a minute. You go from Christianity to atheism to Judaism. Why?
Things convinced me. I believe that I must have a soul, because I thought to myself, if I didn't have a soul, if a copy were made of my body, why wouldn't that be me?
Okay, that was an interesting concept. That's a cloning question, and a very, very interesting one. And how long were you Jewish before, I understand, you went back to Christianity?
About 2 years.
Why?
Then I began to study Christianity with a different perspective. For the first time, I understood the concept of the Trinity, that it is speaking about only one God, that Jesus himself is God. And I understood the salvation of mankind, that God himself became a human being and paid the price for all of man's sins. So Christianity.
So how did that concept help you get through life?
I feel that I can communicate with God since I became a Christian. I feel that the only way that you can really communicate with God is believing in Jesus.
Now, what about those billions who are not Christians? Can they communicate with God through their own religion?
I believe that since God paid an infinite price for mankind, I believe that you cannot communicate with God except in the sense that you can ask him to save you through faith in Jesus.
So how does that differ from the fundamentalist Muslims who believe that only through Allah you can reach God?
Well, as you know, as Muslims become more religious, they tend to become more violent and follow jihad. As Christians become more religious, they tend to become more peaceful and more loving. And in my opinion, there's only one true religion, and that's Christianity.
I'm not here to argue with you in any way. However, I still believe that with all of the billions of people on Earth, there are many paths to God. I cannot believe for a moment that God would want only a single path.
If you look at
I've been attacked on this subject before by fundamentalist Christians who called me every name under the sun, and I'm willing to accept that they're intolerant of my viewpoint. But the fact of the matter is, I believe that by saying only your way is the pure way, you're saying all the other people are less than human. You're saying they're 4/5 a human, and I can't accept that. But hey, I respect your way. I also respect people who are atheists. I think they're wrong. I think they're gambling, and they're going to be found out to be wrong at the end of the road. I certainly can't prove it. If I could, I would. But again, I've been attacked for this. I guess I didn't expect it to happen again today, but it was inevitable that it would if I bring up religion. I may as well give you my religious perspective for whatever it's worth. It's one man's opinion. I want you to take a pencil in your head, and I want you to draw a circle. Can you do that? Draw that circle in your head? I'm very good at pictographic verbiage. I can have you understand things through pictures in your head. You drew a circle in your mind. Now draw a little circle in the middle of that circle. Now imagine that that little circle is the tunnel to God. Now take lines from the big circle and draw them to the little circle. Okay? And those lines can represent any one of the principal religions on earth, whether it be Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, or Hinduism. I'm using the five principal religions on earth because they represent the majority of people. I recognize there is Zoroastrianism and other religions, but I would like to focus for the moment only on the five principal religions of the earth. And I would say that each of these religions are conduits to that tunnel to God. And that if people truly believe in their religion and they practice their religion and it brings them closer to God, meaning they can behave more godly and nicer to their fellow man, so be it. But the minute one religion starts to say, only my religion can get people to God, all the other religions are less perfect than mine, therefore all the other people are less perfect than I, therefore we are creating conflict, and therefore the religion fails. Any religion that says the other religions are less than them or it is a lesser religion is creating conflict, which is in opposition to the teachings of the religion itself. I want you to understand what I just said to you. It's actually quite a brilliant concept if you analyze it, which is that if you say that your religion is so exclusive that only those in your religion can see God or reach God, what you're doing is creating conflict between yourself and the rest of humanity. And in so doing, you're violating the tenets of your own religion or the teachings of your own religion. Because after all, analyze any religion. I don't care what the religion is. I can boil any religion on earth down to one phrase, and I've done this before. Since it's summer, I'll do it again. Which is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Think about it. Think about it. It says it all. I mean, there are ways to arrive at that concept of kindness. But at the end of the day, most religions teach the same thing. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It's kind of easy to remember that. I mean, you could practice every tenet of your religion and be the worst SOB on the planet. And what does that make you? What does that make you? You're a religious man, but you push aside a woman who's 9 months pregnant on an airplane to get a seat? What does that make you? A holy man? It makes you a pig. And I've seen it happen. I mean, and so forth and so on. Or you believe in your religion and you're willing to cut someone's head off to prove how holy you are. Well, this is all fraudulent. If you're that much of a zealot and you're excluding every other religious practice as less than yours, you're going to create war. And so therefore, since I am a man of peace and I think that all people should see God, I believe that all religions, in my mind, are equally valid for those who believe in them, so long as it leads to the same conclusion, which is that do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or you want to reverse it, do not do unto others as you would have them not do unto you, whichever way you want to look at it. So that's it. That's what I mean by, that's my view, rather, of the whole thing, you know. Now, again, it's one man's opinion. I know many of you are going to be angry at me, and you're going to start, I get emails for years after a thing like this. And I appreciate that you're angry at me, if you are. How about if you're not angry at me and you agree with me and you're a Christian? Because I've had Christian theologians call me and write me and say, you're right. Those who don't see, and they're devout Christians, and they see it my way. So don't assume that your view of Christianity is the only way either. You may have been mistaught, by the way, to think that only your way is the right way. Just as I say to you, I'm an individual with one viewpoint. And the day religion starts to create strife is the day religion is not doing its job, so to speak. What is the meaning of religion? Tell me what the meaning of religion is. Is it not to give man peace and show him a way? What is the meaning of a religion to begin with? Let's start from the beginning. Let's clear the slate. Get out your mental eraser. Child is born. A child has nothing. A child has no religion. A child may have a soul. Or it may not have a soul. I believe there are children who are born without souls. I believe there are children who are born evil. And, of course, they become Democrats. But putting aside the humor for the moment, there are children who have souls, and the soul does not know what it is. It could be raised in any church. It could be raised in a synagogue. It could be raised in a Buddhist temple. It could be raised in a Hindu temple. It could be raised as an atheist. It could be raised as a socialist. It could be raised as a communist. And, of course, the communists want to grab your child before that child has been developed, and they want to brainwash that child because they understand that hearts and minds are important to grab, and that's why they have brainwashed your children through the NEA and through the public schools into believing that only a large government, only a big government, only government can help them, and government is good. And so therefore, again, the religious will become the political at a certain point. Which is why the communists said that religion is the opiate of the masses, because they recognized that people who truly believed in God were unlikely to convert to statism. They would not worship the Obama of their time. They would not worship Barbara Boxer of the Barbara Boxer Politburo types of their time, because they would not bow down to false idols. And Obama's a false idol, make no mistake about it. The man has held himself up as an idol to be worshipped, not a president to lead a nation. The man has narcissism to the nth degree. The man has many psychological problems that are not being discussed because the people in the media are too close to the situation to recognize that we have a psychological mess on our hands with this president. And one day it'll be discussed, whether it's 50 years from now or 5 years from now, the books will start to come out. So we've wandered far afield from the religious question. I'll be right back with the religious question.
Savage.
Stumbled into a minefield talking about religion. I guess it's a break from politics. They're intermingled in a certain way, but let's stick to the religion for a minute. I have been in places where I have felt the wall shake with fervent belief. And it's when you're only when you're with a congregation of true believers, whatever the religion may be, that you can truly feel the thunder of God. I mean, it's very hard to feel it alone. Many of you can. You can be on a ship in the middle of the sea and in the middle of a storm, you'll see God. And I've felt things like that in my life. I've been on ships where I almost died. I've almost died falling off a cliff. I mean, you can see God in many ways, positive and negative. But I want to stick to the religion for a minute. I remember, for example, being when I was a kid, I went into a Brother Billy in the streets of New York. And he was a street preacher. And I was interested in meeting, you know, even the craziest people on earth at the time. At the end of that day, I wound up driving him up to Harlem into a storefront Abyssinian church, and those walls were shaking. The people were talking to God. I felt God in that room. I have been later on in my life in St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York on a Christmas Eve. There was God. I felt God in that cathedral. I have been at 777 Eastern Parkway in Brooklyn with the Hasidim, the Orthodox Jewish people, when there were thousands of men in black garb, packed shoulder to shoulder, meeting God on the Sabbath. I have felt God in that room. I have been in a straw hut in the Fiji Islands drinking kava kava with the Fijian people as they were chanting. I don't know who was in that room, but I certainly wasn't in the room alone with only those seven men. So there are many places on earth where the people can find unity and find God. And I have been lucky enough to have it a few times. At this time in my life, perhaps I'm too isolated, alone, and too much of a recluse. I'm not comfortable in any group setting in religion. I don't know what it is, but I just don't know why I've walked away from the whole package. I have on my desk my Bible, the Old Testament, with dozens, if not hundreds, of yellow tabs in it. You know, post-its. I told you about this Bible many times. It's been photographed and put on my website, michaelsavage.com. It's not there now. Because I want you to understand I'm not just making this stuff up. When things go real bad, we all tend to reach for something other than, you know, a glass of whiskey or a cigarette. And I think most people will admit that at certain points, you have to believe in something. As my mother taught me, everyone has to believe in something. And many will say, well, I don't believe in God. And I've told you before that if you're an atheist who believes in nothing, then you believe in something, and that something is nothing. I know it sounds like a joke, but you do believe in something if you believe in nothing. You know, so try to hit this empty. Try to go through this world empty. I don't think you're going to get too far. And I think that's why so many people do fall into the hole of drugs or the hole of drugs or alcoholism. Well, whatever it is. And we all struggle with this. We're all struggling. None of us have a halo. And there's nothing to rejoice in some ways. And there's everything to rejoice in some ways. So, I mean, I'm going around in circles because it's summertime, and I have that feeling of a kid at the end of June rather than July where the school year is still on, but there's only a few more days, and he can't look at one more book. He has to close the books. He opens a book, and it's so hot outside, and he sees the flies buzzing right outside the screen of the schoolyard, and he hears the birds outside the window, and he doesn't want to be in that room anymore. He wants to be outside, and he wants to be free, and he wants to walk in the clean sunlight of the day. But he's stuck inside that room, and that's where I am today. In that day a man shall cast away his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which they made for themselves to worship to the moles and to the bats. And the idols shall utterly pass away, and men shall go into the caves of the rocks and into the holes of the earth from before the terror of the Lord and from the glory of his majesty when he has ariseth to shake mightily the earth. Isaiah. What does it mean? Whatever you want it to mean. Or nothing, depending upon your viewpoint. New York City, W.O.R. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. My personal belief is however the universe works and whatever it has in store for us is just that. And irrespective of what belief system we believe in, whatever is going on in this world is going to happen to us, and we can believe in Judaism, Christianity.
So you think you're just a leaf in a stream going downstream and there's nothing you can do as a leaf?
I'm sorry?
You believe that you are like a leaf thrown into a stream, and you're just moving along in that stream, and that you have no effect upon the stream itself.
I believe that I have an effect on this world if I choose to. But
you're saying, you have no free identity and free association. You can't make your life become what it should be. You can't alter situations and affect the outcome of your life.
I certainly can, but not after death. As I said, however the universe works. And
yeah, but wait. I want to back up on this, because many people think that they're just leaves in a stream and they have no effect upon their destiny. You don't believe that, though.
No, I do believe that in my destiny, as far as if I decide to be a bum who's drinking on the corner or a PhD like yourself. But once we die, it's up to the universe. And just because you believe in Christianity doesn't necessarily...
Wait, what do you mean by it's up to the universe? What is up to the universe once we die?
That I don't know. And I don't believe that anybody knows. And just because we subscribe to a particular theory...
I understand. But do you believe that your acts while you are living will have any effect upon what happens afterwards?
I don't know. But I will tell you that I definitely try to do the right thing in life, just in case.
All right. Well, there's many reasons to do the right thing. Some of them are based upon selfish motives, such as just in case. And I have ascribed to that as well. I want to gamble that there is a judgment day. And so, you know, not necessarily because I'm such a good person.
But I just don't believe. I think it's insane to say that one particular religion is the right way.
Are you religious, John? Do you have a religion?
I was raised Roman Catholic, and at about maybe 21 years old, I gave it all up and just decided to explore other religions.
Interesting. All right, we'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This takes me back to my days at the University of California at Berkeley, when I was working for my doctorate. The streets were alive with communists, lunatics, drug addicts, drug dealers, religious proselytizers, nymphomaniacs, liberals. And here we are in the Savage Nation, many years later, and we're talking about religion. And I don't know how I stumbled onto this, but I raised the question that a question arose from me to the audience, where I said, were you once born into a religion, then you went to another religion, then it went back to your original religion, and why? The essay question, not the short answer. And I remember how this question arose once. I was once sitting in Berkeley, as a matter of fact, in the 70s, it was on a Sabbath. There was to be a discussion before a dinner. The dinners were incredible. In fact, the food was as much a part of the religion as any. And you got to remember that food is a big part of any religion. If it's a good religion, food is a big part of it. It's what gets the people in and keeps them coming back. But The dinners were great. They were communal dinners. Everyone would help cook and eat and drink. Lots of drinking. But before the dinners, there was some conversation. And there was a rabbi who was talking. And he was known as a very, there's all levels of everything. This guy was known as very insightful, let's put it to you that way. And he said something once. He was an interesting guy. I mean, he wasn't like, you know, Zeus sitting up on a mountaintop. He looked a little bit like Woody Allen, as a matter of fact, very soft-spoken. And he said that all religions are good, but the religion you were born into is the religion that you're meant to follow, is what he said to the group. And somehow that stuck with me. He also once, a cat or dog walked in the middle of the discussion into this house of prayer. And everyone went, oh, there's a dog. Get it out. And he said, no, it's probably somebody who was Jewish when they were a person. And he's lonely. He wants them to come back and see some friendly people, which I thought was very unusual for a religious setting. Anyway, but those days are long gone. It was a spiritually interesting period, the 70s. In America, and many, many interesting things occurred, and many interesting people occurred, and things were, in some ways, phenomenally elevated. Don't underestimate all of what happened in the 70s. Don't write it all off as pornography, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Yeah, that rose up in that time, but so did a lot of other great things rise up in that time as well. You know, it all came up. There was so much ferment, so much creativity in America, that everything came up, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So here we are now, and I don't know whether to say we are living in a cynical time, a more cynical time. When was it not a cynical time in America? The 50s, you're saying, wasn't a cynical time. Behind the ad men? What was behind the ad men? Behind the button-down guy, behind Mad Men? We talked about it yesterday. What was going on behind the scenes? What's going on today behind the scenes? Same thing. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, there is a new element, of course, socially, and that's why we have Obama, who was a faker as president, which is the high degree of drug usage in the population, and the supersaturation of entertainment has melted down the American mind to the point that a fraudster and a huckster like this could actually get away with being a president and push open communism and not be seen for it, except by a few people. Which leads me back to what I said we were going to do before, and I really think before we go back to the religion thing, at this juncture, I think we ought to play what I opened with yesterday. Let's play it for about 4 minutes, guys, and break it and come back on the Savage Nation. Okay? You do know there's been a revolution in America. You do recognize that Barack Obama is exactly what I warned you he was. The man is a naked Soviet-era communist. He hates success. He hates successful people. Yes, he is surrounded by them, just as many dictators used successful people to gain a foothold. And the successful who put them in power thought that they would control them forever. And shortly thereafter, the dictators that were established took total power away from the power structure that put them in there. That would apply to folks in Germany. That would apply to people in the past in Italy. It doesn't matter. It is history repeating itself. Now, during the election season last year, I was the only one in America who saw this coming. In the way I saw it coming, many people saw through Obama. Everyone knew he was the most far-left radical senator in U.S. history and that we could expect nothing but the same if he became president, God forbid. But I wrote a monologue in which I discussed the concept that I phrased trickle-up poverty, which was stolen perhaps the next minute by someone in the media that you may recognize as someone who has no original ideas but steals. But trickle-up poverty is what you're getting right now. It was I who told you back in October that under Obama, you're going to have trickle-up poverty. We've gone from morning to twilight, so play It's Twilight Time on the Savage Nation as my summer audience awakens from their suntans and recognizes that there's no longer an America to be recognized under this communist dictator, Barack Hussein Obama. Say it like it is. The man is a naked communist surrounded by Politburo members, and they are trying to change this country in a way that you'll regret because you're going to lose your freedom as sure as I'm sitting here. If you don't stop these clowns right now, within 4 years you won't have your freedom. All right, what's the point of me getting excited? I've been banned from Britain. I guess next I'll be banned from America. Maybe they could send me to Devil's Island. Now, I wrote this in October of 2008. And I want to read you what I wrote. I'm quoting myself from October of 2008. Because if I could be so right then, when everyone in the media saw this man as hope and change, not the naked communist that he is, I will then come back on the air and I will tell you what's coming after this if he has not stopped cold through the electorate, through the ballot box, through streets, through tea parties, through million men marches. The man must be stopped or you're going to lose your freedom itself. That's what's happening. You have to understand what I'm saying to you. Today it's healthcare, tomorrow it's speech. And after speech, it's behavior. And after behavior, it's re-education camps. And those who don't go into the re-education camps that come out sufficiently re-educated go into the slave labor camps. You say it can't happen here, I say it is happening here. In October of 2008, I wrote a monologue in which I called the concept trickle-up poverty. I told you it would be imposed. I said that he would do that, and he is doing it with his Soviet-era medical treatment plan that he is pushing as I speak. Here is what I wrote in October. The liberal media talking heads are already proclaiming that a Barack Obama victory will be revolutionary. Revolutionary is right. The last great revolution took place in Russia. Within a year of the Russian Revolution in 1917, the communist leader Lenin brought the Russians change they could believe in. He created an economic system in which one, all industry was nationalized and strict centralized management was introduced. Two, obligatory labor duty was imposed onto non-working classes or people who had money. Three, food was rationed and centrally distributed. Four, military-like control of railroads was introduced. Private enterprise became illegal. Next, Stalin took over the Soviet Union years later. What did he do? He imposed a state-run system of socialized medicine, which is almost a duplicate of what Obama is trying to do. He formed a strict, centralized cultural administration, an ideological control system, in other words, re-education. I went on in October of 08. There is every reason to believe that some kind of socialist revolution will occur under BO. Bush has already imposed socialism on the banks. Now remember, I wrote this in October. And Obama promises to do more of the same. The Soviets put people with money to work in factories. Here's what I predicted. Under Obama, the business owners in this country who drive the economy will be put to work by being forced to pay crushing taxes that will fund gold-plated health care for illegal aliens and welfare recipients. Private enterprise may not actually be made illegal, but so many businesses will die under an Obama administration that the same goal will be accomplished. Instead of trickle-down economics, we'll have trickle-up poverty. That was from October 15, 2008, on the most predictive radio show in the United States of America. We have gone from Reagan's phrase, "It is morning in America," to "America is morning." Play "It's Twilight Time" while I catch my breath and take my calls on the Savage Nation.
Are falling. It's twilight time. Out of the mist,
your country is dying.
Is
the young man from the slums of Chicago has one goal in mind, and that is to make everyone equal, to make everyone the same, to punish those who are faster, quicker, and brighter and willing to work harder. It is sad to see the country is being given away without so much as a voice being raised in the U.S. Senate. And if you're going to comment on this, you know what? Call somebody else. I really have no reason to take your calls, system, according to what I have read. We're going to have an expert sing on one question. What about those of us who do not want losing everything? All right, so we've gone from religion to politics. Now we're going to go back to religion. Now that we got politics out of the way, I think we can go back to religion, okay? But, you know, at a certain point, religion is political and politics can be religious. And you got to understand that to the politicians today, particularly the Democrat socialists, their religion is government itself. Their temple is Congress. Their God is money, or actually their God is power, because most of them don't have money. Their God is power, and they worship at the temple of power. And to them, the drug is power. That is why people in politics need more and more power through more and more bureaucrats and more control over us. And that is why we must oppose them. We are not living in a dictatorship yet. We are protected by our Constitution, which is why it's so sad that a woman of such low caliber as Sonia Sotomayor will be on the Supreme Court. Of course, they're replacing Breyer, a liberal, with another liberal. I expected that. But they could have chosen a liberal with some kind of legal genius. I mean, I've met liberals who are lawyers who are brilliant people. She's not brilliant. This is not a brilliant woman. And you may say, well, maybe that's a blessing. Maybe it is a blessing. I don't know. You could say it's a blessing that we don't have a brilliant liberal, but does it matter? It's all a vote anyway at the end of the day. 1-800-449-8255. New York. No, let's go to Los Angeles, okay? The show is heard all across the country, as you know. Let's start on KGIL in L.A. Earl, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, I got to tell you, I love you so much, and you are doing such a great job. Brother, I've been with you for at least for the last year listening to you just about it.
Thank you. Well, you know what? It takes one person at a time to make a show. So what was your religious path?
I started off in a very evangelical, charismatic Christianity. I moved on, and this is why the political is important, to a more a fundamentalist Christianity. And politics is all throughout that. And you really have to have a grasp on politics. That'll help you understand what's the difference between liberal, conservative, I mean, the whole nine. Well, for me, my path was going from that till it got to a point where I had to move back from all of it. And to examine what you do, Michael. You try to find out what the truth is.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, but you know, it's like pondering your navel at a certain point. In other words, you can analyze things to death and wind up with no one but yourself and a dog too.
Absolutely. If you keep it simple, man, I got to tell you, you to me are the very nemesis of Obama, because he is all about subtlety. You are all about just straightforward talk. You don't care who hates. You don't care how people feel about it, or matter of fact, the more people...
I know, maybe it's foolish, you know, looking back 15 years of speaking my mind without any red lights on the roadway. I mean, it's gotten me in a lot of trouble, too, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Well, wait a minute. Here's where you have to, man, I can't encourage you enough. Do you know that one of the main characteristics of Satan, the Bible talks about his subtlety? I mean, Obama, the best reading that you will probably get, I don't know if you've read this before... It's an interview by this lady called Kathleen Falsani. But anyway, she interviewed Obama to figure out what he believed. And as a man thinketh, so he is. All you need to do is get into what the guy thinks, his belief system, and that tells you everything. I mean, he is so subtle, you don't know whether he's Christian.
Well, he's a politician in that regard. I've read Aristotle's The Politician, so I understand they're all the same in that regard. They never speak the truth. They speak in syllogisms, and they never tell you anything. They let you believe what you want to believe. But your own path, you started as a regular Christian evangelical. You became what next?
After I became a fundamentalist Christian.
And then what?
The church I was at, the guy was so heavy-handed, he told people it was like living in a dictatorship. That's what it was like, and that's why
I understand that. That's right. Religions can become very dictatorial and very hierarchical, which turns me off. Did you then become something different, religious-wise?
I almost became heretical if a Christian, a dogmatic Christian, looked at me, and I was a dogmatic Christian. He'd say, hey, man, you're believing all these universal things. I guess I became Gnostic or a New Age belief, but I actually pulled back. And I start using terms like truth and trying to find out or what universal laws were, as opposed to...
Well, what are you today? Are you a practicing Christian today?
What? This is really huge. I can't pull back so far while I lose my whole foundation. So
that's correct. But I'm saying, but you're still a Christian, I hope.
You know what? I almost lost it, really, until I started observing...
That's the problem, Earl. You'll find out if you disconnect your moorings to such an extent that you're floating at sea, you're going to have nothing. And then you're going to be in the sea of darkness. You may never find your way back. Don't cut that last line to that religion.
say this, Michael. It now that
stay
I
on the line, man. Stay on the line.
Savage.
All right, well, look, you know, we're getting very interesting callers today because when we go off the political and get into the spiritual, the psychological, the life questions, I think it becomes an interesting a show. And, of course, they all lead back to politics one way or the other. I think of the people who are most tormented in searching to find their path in their life, who have spent years trying to find themselves, so to speak, moving around in religions, moving around in philosophies. Many of these people are listeners to this show, and for many different reasons, I know this to be true. And most of you who might call on this issue today would never call about politics for reasons that we'll talk about another day. Let's go to Palm Beach, where Barbara is calling. I think it's a fascinating call. Barbara, go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Since I was 3 and 5 years old, looking up at the stars, I recall there were two things I was madly in love with, the stars and truth. And I was born and raised in a Roman Catholic family, not a devout family, devout practicing Catholic family. But then on my own, I'm 12 and 14 years old, I'm searching for the truth, and I'm studying on my own all these philosophies, Spinoza, Aristotle, everything, and I kept searching and through the religions and all these different religions. And what the point I'm trying to make is that eventually through my life and my life experiences, I end up back where I began, which is the Roman Catholic Church. And then I understood it. You see, you have to understand, Michael, many, if not most, Catholics out there don't truly understand the Catholicism, the truth of the theology of the Catholic faith. Past few years when I was taking the Catholic Bible classes, I learned that my Catholic Church says this, that yes, Jews and Protestants and Hindus and Buddhas and even possibly some atheists will certainly go to heaven. That God judges the heart. He's going to judge us by the golden rule, how much we love. And this is very important to understand that concept. That's
well, it's a very accepting, tolerant view of the world. That's what I was trying to get at. And I think that if we haven't learned post 9/11 to be tolerant of others, it's going to lead to further disaster for all of us. Now, when I say tolerant, I don't mean let someone step on you or convert you to their religion against your will. That's a little different than accepting that their path may be right for them and wrong for you. That's a little different. But it's interesting you said you always seek a truth seeker and then you went back to your original religion, the religion of your childhood or of your birth, the religion of your parents, as it were, and you started to see the beauty, the deeper beauty, the deeper meaning of your religion, which is Roman Catholicism. Isn't that what you said?
Well, yes, but because of that, but I also wanted to comment, without looking for anything or expecting anything, once I returned to my faith and I started again resuming the practices of the Catholic practices of confession and Holy Communion, the sacraments, I had, without drugs, I was never into drugs, legal or illegal, and I've had some spiritual experiences happen to me with that. Maybe you should have a show on that. Boy, will you get the calls.
A show on what, Barbara?
I'm sorry?
A show on what?
About people who've had religious experiences. Some like, I didn't look
I
for
see what you mean. Okay, I appreciate what you just said. Thank you. Now, that triggers another thought in my mind. Over the weekend, I watched the movie The Deer Slayer with Robert De Niro. Now, I got to go into this for a reason. It's directly related to politics and religion. I had seen it a few times in pieces. It was very long, like 3 hours long. The opening hour of that movie, the opening 90 minutes of that movie, is astounding. First, there's a wedding in a town outside Pittsburgh in the steel mills. These are blue-collar guys, steel workers. And the Roman Catholic Church that is portrayed in that film is one of the most beautiful portrayals of religion as practiced by common people I've ever seen in my life. It was astoundingly beautiful. And you look at it and you wonder what happened to America, how these men all grew up in the same community, all went to the same church, all were married in the same church, all buried their parents in that same church. And the continuity then leads them to Vietnam. They're drafted and they go into the army together and they fight together. And the portrayal of how the American men were brutalized by the NVA. Now, whether this was an isolated incident or it occurred more frequently, I do not know. But the absolute brutality of the torture inflicted on the American men by the Vietnamese communists was so beyond anyone's conception of chillingly frightening that it's hard to portray unless you've seen the movie. You should see it again. But the chill of that movie was how the communists swept through South Vietnam, not only how they killed the American men. I know many of you are brainwashed into thinking that the American men were the brutals. Oh, were your brains washed by Joan Baez and the left-wing vermin of this country, from Walter Cronkite to every stinker in the media who told you that we were the bad ones. Take a look at what happened after we left Vietnam, when those communist evil men killed over 1 million South Vietnamese, re-education camps, torture camps, death camps. That didn't make it to the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite. That didn't make it to the folk songs of Joan Baez. That didn't make it into your mind. No, all you had was the American men, the heroes who went over there and fought and died and came back, some of them ruined for life, some of them improved for life. You didn't know any of that. All you knew was that they were struggling for their independence and Ho Chi Minh was a hero. But the point I'm making is, starts with that church, the religion, the guys go to Vietnam and how they're tortured and how they escape that and what it does for them, how it affects them for the rest of their lives. And you look at that and you say to yourself, you better fight against communism with everything in you. You know, when I saw the scene of the people fleeing Saigon at the end of that movie, as the communists sweep into power and sweep through the south of Vietnam, when I saw the people with their packages of the goods that they could grab out of their houses and they're running away, I said, it can't happen here. It can't happen here. It is happening here. You say, oh, come on, you're crazy. You're an extremist. Things don't happen overnight. They happen by degree. Revolutions don't happen overnight. They happen by degree. Obama is a revolutionary communist by every one of his acts. Bill Ayers is Barack Obama. We told you this before the election. Make no mistake about it. He's just a smooth con man. And he conned you white liberals in particular into thinking he was for you and you for him. I am telling you as I stand here that every instinct in me, whatever I may have in the instinctual department, that I have been right 100 times on the show over 15 years, every instinct in me tells me that we are watching a slow-growing communist revolution in this country. And it can still be altered. It can still be stopped. But if you don't recognize who this man is and how his closest associates are exactly in that image, then you know nothing about history, you know nothing about the current times, and you cannot see a thing as to what is coming in the future. So I told you that religion would eventually lead back to politics, and politics would lead us back to religion. So on that note, let me summarize what I just said. Go and watch the Deer, I think it's called the Deer Slayer. The Deer Hunter, I'm sorry, with Robert De Niro. And watch particularly the scenes in the church. Because who directed that movie? I don't remember who directed that film. But, you know, those days are over of film direction. Guys, look it up while we're talking. The genius of the director here was that he used common people from that area and from that church in the film, mixed in with the actors, so that when you see a wedding scene, you're seeing the old geezer sitting at the bar from the town. When you see a church scene, you're seeing the regular people from the church mixed in with the, I believe these people ethnically were either Polish Americans or Russian Americans or a mixture of both. And who were largely the steel workers at that time in that area, and how they go over to Vietnam. And, of course, it was their hunting skills, their ability to use guns, and their ability to hunt that permitted them to survive in Vietnam. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? The same thing was true. The same thing was true, by the way, in World War II, if you studied the history of our fighter pilots. Many of them came from farms they'd never flown before. But they grew up with a .22 caliber rifle hunting small game. And I remember reading some of these pilots who flew the P-51s, the Mustangs. They said that when they went to flight school and then they went into aerial combat, it was the same as hunting a rodent or a deer. They learned that they had to, when they're fighting the enemy fighter, they had to lead the plane. They had to fire their bullets ahead of the plane that was flying across their field of vision, just as an animal running. Now, how are you going to teach that to a kid who never fired a gun in his life? How are you going to teach that to a kid who grew up complaining about everything, taught to complain that he feels like he has an inner woman in him, and he has to get down and cry when someone asks him to do something hard? He complains, he cries, he sues, he goes back to mommy. How in the world can a country survive with a nation of imbeciles like this that we've raised for the last 20 years? How in the world can we ever survive? How can this country ever defend itself? And when you add that picture up of the weakling generation that we have raised, the drug addicts, the Ritalin addicts, the potheads, the cokeheads, you name it, compare that with a growing threat from China, where they have millions of unmarried men, where they have a population of males way in excess of females by design. And I want you to understand that it was by design. That the one-child policy of China, where the girl baby was aborted and the boy baby was permitted to be born, was done specifically to create approximately 10 million extra men. And there is not a time in history that a nation that has had such excess in men has not gone to war. Think about it, fool. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. Anyway, the Deer Hunter with Robert De Niro that I was mentioning was directed by Michael Cimino. That's number one fact. And number two fact is regarding the China, the excessive male population. The number will be 30 million men by 2020, disproportionate to the female population. 30 million excess men by 2020. 30 million. 30 million men that they can send to war and waste. We have 5 million women more than men in America. Think about that one. New York City, WOR. Michael, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I'm calling regarding the topic of religion and calling to argue that there is a truth and that there should be one religion, a true religion that leads to God. I believe that the Bible can't both be the Word of God and not the Word of God, just like I believe that Jesus can't be the Savior, the Son of God, and also at the same time not be. So either somebody has to be right on that point or wrong on that point.
I understand. So you would argue that the only way is through Jesus?
Yes.
So therefore, all the people who do not follow that path are infidels to you?
No. No. To all people who don't follow that path are my fellow man. I don't believe that it makes a person less of a man or less of a person because they don't subscribe to the Catholic faith. I believe that, you know, I need to love them as my neighbor and educate them, and not forcibly. I think that if I live my life as a good Catholic and set a good example and show the truth, that people will, if they have a good heart, will see the truth and ask, what religion are you a part of? And they may want to learn more about my religion.
When you walk down the streets of New York and you see people in other religious garb, do you think that they're less than you?
No, I do not.
Well, you must, because you say there's only one way to reach God, so you must think of them as heathens or as idiots.
No, I don't think them as idiots. Just like somebody who walks down the street and doesn't understand calculus, and I understand calculus, I don't think the person, because they don't understand calculus, is an idiot or a buffoon. I just think that they have not been either instructed or taught, or just that they haven't developed an interest in calculus yet. I don't think less of a person just because they don't think the same way I do.
Well, so that's a semi-tolerant view of your fellow man, I would admit. But it's not a viewpoint that accepts them as an equal, is it?
As a person that rejects communism, I also reject the idea of equality. I don't think that there is equality. I don't think two men are the same. One man may be taller than another. One man may be smarter. One may be stronger than the other. I don't believe in equality, which is something that communism tries to push down people's throats. And why
I hear you. Look, I'm just trying to understand how a man as advanced as you are intellectually cannot accept that there are other ways to reach God than your way.
Well, I don't consider myself advanced intellectually. I think some of the most holy people in the world have been very ignorant. Some couldn't even read or write. I don't think God judges a person by their intellect. I think he judges them by their actions and their love for their fellow man.
Well, I agree with you on that point. That's where it comes back to do unto others as you have them do unto you, which is the hardest thing in the world to practice. You know, you're driving down a road and someone cuts you off or they stop too abruptly and you get thrown in your car. When you gnash your teeth, you fist, and you want to yell at them. So we're human beings, and inside there's this wild naked ape that wants to come out, and we have to control it.
I think
that's what religion is all about, by the way, is about controlling man's impulses.
I agree.
All right, well, let's pause at that. Let's break from each other at that point. I don't think we have to agree on all of this. This is a fascinating topic. And again, God, country, and apple pie. In this case, it's God, country, and an eggplant. I've been getting a lot of eggplant calls today, which I haven't taken. I don't know why. I think when I was traveling on Wednesday, the good staff that I have played a replay where I talked about the proper way to cook eggplant. And now everyone's calling me about eggplant. I don't even remember that show. That's the problem. I don't remember how to cook eggplant. I do so many shows, 15 years, 3 hours a day. You know, I have a young lady right now archiving my shows, if you can believe it. Many of my shows are on tape. I'm fanatic about it. And she's archiving it, and she's doing keywords. I don't know if she's going to do one called eggplant, but I hope so. She's probably going to do food or restaurants or something to that effect. Anyway, we're going to do God, we're going to do country, we're going to do eggplant and apple pie this week, I think on a regular basis. We're going to do movies, we're going to do entertainment, we're going to do Obama, we're going to do communism. I think you need to bone up, boys and girls, on the scythe of communism in the 20th century. I think, boys and girls, you have to understand that when you have a government in the form of Obama and Hillary Clinton taking the side of a naked communist in the nation of Honduras, where the people threw out a communist dictator, and they are actually on the side of Fidel Castro and Chavez and the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, you better wake up to the fact of who your government really is. I don't think you have to be a genius to put two and two together, do you? Now, why would our government take the side, the same side in the issue of Honduras, as Fidel Castro, a dictator, a bloody dictator with blood on his hands, Hugo Chavez, a dictator, an open, naked dictator, and a socialist at that, and of the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, naked communists? How could you not understand that your government has taken the side of communists? What does that make them? They didn't say that they should not permit the dictator to come back to Honduras, that the people should be allowed to elect their own leadership. They said, no, we want to reimpose the communist dictator in Honduras. Doesn't that tell you something? With the takeover of General Motors, the takeover of the banks, the takeover of health care, hello, what has to happen for you to understand that you've had a revolution in the country? Tell me what has to happen. What do you think, they're going to march with a red flag and play the Internacional in the White House instead of the egg rolling contest? What are you, people that dumb? You don't understand how things are working today? It's by degree, my friends, but it's moving very rapidly. So I've made as many points as I can or I want to today. I'm not going to bust another gut over this. You say, well, what can I do about it? I know he's a communist. I can smell it on him. I can see it on him. I know what he is. What can I do about it? Think about it. Maybe you have a representative or two left in the country who might actually believe in participatory democracy. I know they're few and far between, and the name isn't Boxer and Feinstein. I recognize that. But there are some who do understand what's going on. Stand up and be counted. Say no to the socialized medicine. That's the linchpin. They get that, it's all over.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Here's some of what we've discussed today on the Savage Nation. Obama makes private medical insurance illegal. I don't know if you know that, but once again, the Obama tricksters have lied to you. According to Investors Business Daily, who read the whole health care bill, to find out that the House health care bill makes individual private medical insurance illegal. That's right. According to the socialized medicine bill, private medical insurance will be made illegal in the United States of America. See, if you have private individual coverage, you won't be able to change it. If you leave a company to work for yourself, you will not be able to buy private. You'll be forced into government health care, GH. They own General Motors, now they're going to own GH. They will kill private insurance companies. This is not change we can believe in. This is the destruction of American capitalism and the rise of Obama communism. When the hell are you people going to wake up? Trickle-up poverty continued. We learned today that the House health care bill makes individual private medical insurance illegal. In other words, those who've actually read the Health Care for All Americans bill found out in a short period of time that Obama and Pelosi and Nostradamus are lying through their noses. Fact of the matter is, right there on page 16, there is a provision making individual private medical insurance illegal. Did you hear this? And I'm going to talk about this socialized medicine. Talk about it again and again and again until you finally understand just how deadly this is for medical care. Effectively, it destroys all private health insurance in America. Obama's medical bill states, quote, "The individual health insurance issuer offering such coverage does not enroll any individual in such coverage. If the first effective date of coverage is on or after the first day of the year, the legislation becomes law." What? Well, it means that those who currently have private individual coverage will not be able to change it. And those who leave a company to work for themselves will not be free to buy individual plans from private carriers. They'll be forced into government health care, GH. This is the future in Dictator Obama's America. And how are these gangsters going to pay for it? With massive tax increases. In the state of New York alone, this would have a massive job-killing effect. It would create a tax rate of nearly 60% for the state's top earners and pressure small business owners to get rid of workers, making even more people dependent on Obama. Again, I must repeat, and I'll keep repeating until you hear it. Here are the words I said in October of 08, even before this con man was elected. Quote, "Under Obama, the business owners in this country who drive the economy will be put to work by being forced to pay crushing taxes that will fund gold-plated health care for illegal aliens and welfare cases. Private enterprise may not actually be made illegal, but so many businesses will die under an Obama administration that the same goal will be accomplished as that in Stalin's Russia. Instead of trickle-down economics, we'll have trickle-up poverty. Trickle-up poverty. Trickle-up poverty." I said that on October 15th, 2008 on the Savage Nation. And now the frightening reality of trickle-up poverty is here. Obama is staging a communist revolution in this country. This is the end of the nation as we know it, unless he and his minions are called out on it. It's like a slow communist revolution right in front of your eyes. It's actually a fast communist revolution in front of your eyes. But apparently not too many people see what Obama is and what he's doing. Who knows if this will be stopped? God only knows where this can end up. I found another provision in one of the health care bill where the government can send people into your home
and force you to and they will vaccinate your child against your will. Oh, they won't do it in that way. It's a demonstration program to send perhaps gangbangers with medical bags and needles in their bag to inject your child with, you know, pertussis vaccine. But anything might happen with this health care bill because no one's read it. Then you got the genius Joe Biden who says the country's going bankrupt, but we have to spend money as fast as we can to keep from going bankrupt. What? We have to destroy the village in order to save it, Joe? It gets crazier by the second. It gets crazier by the second under this group of imposters. It's unbelievable to me. Wisconsin has the coldest July day since 1900. North Dakota farmer says Al Gore should be out here. We're living in Alice in Wonderland with the dumbest, most corrupt people in history running America into the ground and off the cliff. You understand this? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about, what's going on, how this happened? Liberalism is a mental disorder, and it led America to this point. And it's only just begun under this con man. It's unbelievable. This is only less than 6 months. And look already what a man's trying to do. Take a look at the losers running things. Take a look at, none of them have run a business. Not one of them has met a payroll. And they just said, spend money in order to make money. They have no idea what they're talking about. If you did that, you'd be broke. You'd be out of work. Your business would fail. You'd have to fire everybody. Welcome to big government. 1-800-449-8255. I don't even want to get excited over any of it. Could you play instead of that version, could you play the woman who sang it, who I met in the elevator in the Green Street garage 30 years ago before she became a psychic? That's right, that one. I don't know. I forgot her name. She did a better job. I know, Joe. She did a better version. He wrote it, right? Mm-hmm. All right, another Pied Piper led millions of people off the cliff of insanity. Turn that off, too. How about Pantera? Let's get some hard metal, heavy metal playing here. I haven't done that in a while in a Savage Nation. Nothing's moving me. What's wrong with me today? Try Rammstein. Let's see if that does anything for me on the Savage Nation. Since no one cares about communism in America, I'm going to play. That's better. Now, why does that move me? Loud as a claw, man. Some sound. Heavy metal, I'm a, shall I say, sound clean. Why is that funny? I don't know. It struck me as funny. As funny as Pat Cameron in the ballet, costume. About as funny as Jackie Mason pumping iron. I mean, come on.
Bestrafe mich. Bestrafe mich.
As funny as Ann Coulter playing Martha Washington.
Und ich denk.
Anyone like January Jones in Mad Men? She's like Grace Kelly. How does anyone have a name like January Jones? I can't be real. It's like a radio name, January Jones. What's your name? January. Hello? Stunning. But, all right, turn it off already. I'll talk about anything other than politics. I can't take it anymore. And the reason I can't take it is because you've got criminals and gangsters running America, and you actually don't even know it. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. You actually listen to a word they say, and you don't know who they are, what they're doing? It's unbelievable. You don't read it. You didn't read It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis, so you don't know that there's a gang that has taken over America. I read it to you once before. It went over your heads, under your heads, under your feet, in your arms, you know, in the T-zone. It hit you in the T-zone, and you let it go right through you. Should I read it again? Nah, I don't think it matters. I think it's over. I think it's all over, basically. I see 20 years from now, everyone playing checkers, houses unplugged from the grid. In other words, Cuba. All 50 states sort of like a Cuba. No economy. Houses that are fading. No paint on the houses. No services. Spies on every block. Answering only to Obama and his SA. And anyone who speaks out is either taken to a prison camp or shot, disappeared. And you wouldn't even care because at that point it'll be too late. No one will be left to say a word. That's where this leads. He's a young man yet. Remember that. the old communists that he used to get into power will be gone. And they're rather moderate compared to him. This guy's an extremist, in my opinion. Maybe I should read for you, Sinclair Lewis, as it can't happen here, about the nightmarish vision of a future in America where a right-wing party emerges that takes over America. But everything he said about a dictatorship arising from the right did not happen. But now we have a tyranny of a dictatorship that has arisen under Barack Hussein Obama. And since it's only 6 months into it, and they're doing it rather, you know, boiling pot method, you know, you don't even see what's happening here. This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment.
Savage.
Violent outbursts. Well, we're talking about the cruise ship murder of a husband slashed his wife up on a cruise ship. But it occurred to me that America has been plagued recently with violent outbursts involving seemingly so-called normal middle-class people. And as I said, man allegedly stabbed his wife to death in the shower on board a cruise ship. And I'm wondering, could this be related to a society which is drugging itself to suppress normal, healthy human emotions? Anger management, and then the people suffer uncontrollable outbursts. I think it's because we try to manage our anger instead of express it verbally. And I've asked you what's ticked you off so much that you are on the verge of committing a violent act. How were you able to control that anger? And when has suppressing your anger actually gotten you into trouble? When have you crossed the line? We take calls, I guess, from prisons across America on this one. And his weekly report on the shenanigans of the left coast, here is James Herson.
Thanks, Michael. More than ever, our culture is obsessed with vampires. Dominating the cable ratings, HBO's True Blood is a phenomenon. You know, it's now hitting those early Sopranos-like numbers. And the movie Twilight did well enough at the box office to become a franchise. The CW's fall adaptation of The Vampire Diaries is the talk of the new television season. Stars of these shows are becoming superstars. Now, vampires have always been dark, brooding, mysterious figures. As a matter of fact, Focus Features is promoting its new vampire movie, Thirst, that opens later this month by sending reporters a flavored drink that looks like a blood bag.
Oh, my God.
They also included a straw. The film is about a priest that turns into a vampire due to a blood transfusion. Even Christian books have vampires now, like Eric Wilson's Jerusalem Undead, a trilogy that features characters who have risen from the dead after being tainted by the blood of Judas. There's also a new book, which is the religious version of Twilight. It's called Thirsty, and the main character is a guy named Marcus. He's a kind of a demon. Vampires have been around a long time, ever since Bram Stoker's book, Dracula. And they have represented the eternal struggle of good versus evil. But in today's environment of moral relativism, vampires are not portrayed solely as evil monsters. They're not portrayed solely as the night stalkers that prey on the blood of the innocent. They're often sort of defanged and shown as complex characters struggling with newfound morality. For example, New Moon, the Twilight sequel that will be released this fall, the lead character vampire Edward is fighting against his bloodthirsty instincts in search of an undead dignity of sorts. You know, it's the old concept of the villain with a conscience. The good vamps can then use their supernatural powers to fight the bad bloodsuckers in their midst. But this fascination with vampires reflects a realization that something is happening to our community, our state, and our nation. Something monstrous, dangerous, and scary. But where is it coming from? Well, it could be the investment banking community. Take Goldman Sachs, for instance. You know, the firm that just reported profits of more than $2 billion. An article about Goldman that you covered, Michael, was in a recent issue of Rolling Stone. It characterized the firm as, and I quote, "a great vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity, relentlessly jamming its blood funnel into anything that smells like money." So the undead may be prowling Wall Street, but the real Golden Fang Award has to be in the political arena. Let's take a look at the word politics. It derives from poly, in Latin meaning many, and tix, in English meaning bloodsucker. Vampires in Washington suck our lifeblood through so-called bailouts and confiscatory tax schemes, and the vampire politicians play on class envy to manipulate the public, to offer up our country's neck for their fangs. The vampire administration generates fear with false urgency so that we accept the fact that the brain-dead Congress passes legislation without reading it. The undead left wing digs up the carcass of Hillary health scare, brings it back to life as Obamacare, but it's still a parasite that sucks away the soul of the free market economy. GM is not allowed to go through a normal bankruptcy process, but instead is turned into a corporate zombie with no purpose other than that of feeding the ghoulish unions. How long will these blood-sucking socialist parasites be around to serve the bloated, self-serving monolith of ever-expanding government? Well, that's the problem. Vampires are immortal. But Michael, with your help, I'm confident we can drive stakes into at least some of their hearts. Thanks again. Back to you, my friend.
Hey, thanks for the report, James.
Savage.
Hank Paulson, Paulson, you remember him, Mr. Stutterer, has finally resurfaced. He was just on Capitol Hill for a congressional hearing, attempting to defend his actions during the bailout in the final days of the wonderful Bush administration. Here he is trying to cover for himself. Listen.
I served as Secretary of the Treasury from July 2006 to January 2009. During my tenure, the world experienced a financial crisis unprecedented in our lifetimes. The crisis presented a relentless series of novel challenges that required swift, innovative, and dramatic responses.
Through and through, he's making it up. Now, you know I think Denis Kucinich is an open communist, but he happens to be right on the money when he questions Paulson. Listen to this one.
Perhaps you can explain to this committee how a Secretary of the Treasury can justify punishing an unwise but lawful act while ignoring potentially illegal ones.
Well, in terms of legality...
Could you speak closer to the mic?
Yeah, I would say in terms of legality, I think that's... I certainly don't feel qualified to sit here and opine on whether there was an illegal action.
The fake stutterer strikes again. He isn't able to opine, but it gets better. Republican Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio really lays into him, and Paulson says he doesn't have time to answer.
When we started down this bailout road, this bailout fever that's grabbed Washington, it frankly started on October 3rd when the Congress of the United States decided to give you $700 billion of taxpayer money. And the whole premise of that action was that you were going to take that money and you were going to go buy the troubled and toxic assets. You were going to clean things up and things were going to get back on the right track. And yet, to date, the Treasury's not purchased those assets. So I want to know, when did you know that you could not be able to do what you told Congress? I remember hearing sitting in on the conference calls with you and Mr. Bernanke. I remember when you came in front of lawmakers and you talked about, we're going to buy these troubled assets. And yet less than, or actually 10 days later, you had changed direction completely and instead just injected capital into the institution. So did you deceive Congress before the October 3rd vote, Mr. Paulson?
Yeah. Let me.
And again, pretty clear pattern of what's taking place.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think I have time to respond to every question.
He doesn't have time to answer, but he had time to give billions to his Wall Street cronies. But Paulson says all he needed was flexibility.
Wouldn't you say the main point that you and Mr. Bernanke sold, and I didn't go along with this, I thought it was a crazy plan, the main point you sold to the Congress of the United States was we were going to go in and buy these toxic troubled assets?
Well, I would say this.
Would you agree? Yeah, that was the main point.
That was,
and it changed in 10 days.
Let me say this. That was the main thrust, and that's what we talked about. But we, from the beginning, wanted flexibility. Congress wanted to give us flexibility. It was very good that Congress gave us flexibility.
Of course, Obama won't try to take action against Paulson. They're friends with too many of the same people, and they're all going to be together this summer at Martha's Vineyard. On MichaelSavage.com, I've linked to an article by Professor Ellis Washington entitled "Jacques England, Jacques America." What does that mean? Well, it's about my banning by Britain, okay, and the ban on free speech, which affects everybody. I've asked Professor Washington to come on the show to discuss this piece comparing my being banned from Britain to the Dreyfus Affair of the late 1890s. Professor Washington, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Michael, as always, it is a joy and a pleasure to once again have this opportunity to be interviewed by you on the Savage Nation.
Ellis, what brought you to write this particular piece?
What brought Jacques England, Jacques America, is it started off actually as a very different piece. It was originally going to be titled Britain and America Collude to Exclude Michael Savage. And I was just going to do a playoff of that recent article that you had broadcasted by Jim Myers of Newsmax that he had written on July the 1st. And in Jim Myers' article, he had broken the story, actually, a bombshell article, that he had information at the highest levels that Britain and America indeed are colluding presently to exclude Michael Savage. And they, although they tried to deny that they had done this prior to, you know, recent revelations, it begs the question, well, if you're talking about blacklisting Michael Savage right now, why are we not to believe logically that this didn't occur a month, 2 months, maybe even 3 months ago? So Jim's article kind of lit a spark in me, Michael, to further develop some of the themes that he had presented, that you have been blacklisted and that this was a collusion between two of the world's greatest superpowers, and it begs the question, why would they expend all of this energy, all of this skullduggery against a lowly radio talk show host as yourself?
Well, history seems to be lost on many in this day and age. Tell us a little about Zola, Émile Zola, and his piece, Jacques.
The phrase Jacques, for those in the audience that are of a literary bent, will bring to mind the Dreyfus Affair. What is the Dreyfus Affair? It was a scandal, really, a worldwide scandal in France that happened about 115 years ago regarding a young man named Captain Alfred Dreyfus. He was a French artillery soldier for the French army. And because of the prevailing anti-Semitism in late 19th century France, really all across Europe, he became a victim of that, and they trumped up some charges of treason upon him, even though he was a war hero and had an exemplary record above reproach. They fabricated these trumped-up charges of treason and gave him a kangaroo-type trial without really presenting any verifiable evidence to support the allegations, and shipped him off to Devil's Island, which, as most people have heard, is an infamous, terrible island that has since been shut down, that's in the just off the coast of French Guiana in South America. And Captain Alfred Dreyfus has spent about 4 years there, just rotting away until the great writer and intellectual, the French and Jewish person, Emile Zola, took up the cause. And in a famous letter that he wrote in 1898 for the French newspaper El Aurore, he entitled his defense of Captain Dreyfus J'accuse, which is French for I accuse. And in this passionate display of defending his friend, Captain Dreyfus, point by point, like a lawyer, Emile Zola uses all of his literary and intellectual talents to basically draw an accusation against the French government and the French courts for railroading Dreyfus and giving him unjust treatment and sending him to Devil's Island without fair due process and adequate judicial representation.
How long was it until Captain Dreyfus was ultimately vindicated and freed from Devil's Island?
Initially, the charges were brought against him in late, I think it was November of 1894. The following year, like 2 months later, he was tried and shipped off to Devil's Island in around February of 1895. Zola's letter was published in January of 1898. The following year, he was given an official pardon, not an exoneration, mind you, in 1899 by the president. He didn't officially get exonerated in an annulment of all charges until 1906. So just to back up, from 1894 of his initial arrest to 1906, 12 years, Michael, this man had languished in the courts, and a large part of that time was spent in the infamous Devil's Island.
Why do you think my case and Dreyfus are similar?
As I was writing this article, like I said, it went in a totally different direction. I didn't know I was going to go back to this trial 100 years ago regarding Dreyfus. But I'm like you, Michael. A lot of times I'm up late at night. I can't sleep. I watch the History Channel, or books that I've read about history in college or in high school will come flooding my mind. And this case regarding the Dreyfus affair, although it's a historical kind of an anomaly, unless to somebody who studied French history, otherwise you really wouldn't know about this case. I thought it really fit very closely to your situation. Sure, you're not a soldier. Yes, you're not brought up on charges of treason, but there is some very intriguing parallels with your story and how you've been blacklisted by Britain, and now we hear Britain has colluded with America to blacklist your name. And what it is a story of humanity. It is a story where people who have tried to do the right thing and tried to always be a patriot and do that which will benefit humanity have their name defamed, have their name slandered, libeled, and really given an unjust treatment. And those around who could help are quiet, are silent, just like it was 100 years ago with Captain Alfred Dreyfus. All he had on his side was the great writer and intellectual Emile Zola. Thank God for him. Without Emile Zola's letter, J'accuse, he would probably have died in that hellish nightmare of a prison, Devil's Island. I'm doing whatever I can. I'm certainly no Emile Zola, Michael, but I'm doing whatever I can to try to trumpet your cause to England, to America, and to the world that this man has been unjustly slandered, libeled, and defamed by the British government for no logical reason, and this must stop. And I'm glad that you're drawing the line in the sand, Michael, and putting your vast resources at a tremendous sacrifice to you and your family to fight this treasonous act against your name.
Professor Washington, I want to thank you for defending me so eloquently in your writings and for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, once again, I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to come before your intelligent listenership on the Savage Nation. I consider it an honor every time I get a chance to speak to you. I, like you, hope that we can end this terrible tragedy, this terrible defamation against your name. All Great Britain has to do is issue you a formal apology And you have said repeatedly you will drop your lawsuit and you will get on with your life. Nobody needs this aggravation. And I know there's some detractors out there that think you're just trying to mine this situation for your own self-aggrandizement. Those people are idiots. They don't know you like I do, Michael. I know this is the last thing you want, the last thing you and your family need, and that you want to get this put behind you as soon as possible. And I just hope and I plead that Britain and American officials that are listening to this show will talk to the necessary powers that be to vindicate your name and to take your name off that list of infamy as soon as possible. Thank you, Michael Savage.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
From politics to religion today, because if you really want to make people angry, you may as well talk about religion and politics. Mom taught me never to talk about politics or religion, how wrong she was. The fact of the matter is, you want to, you know, attract people's attention, you got to talk about politics and religion. Since I normally talk about politics and not religion, occasionally I will read from the Bible. I think today is a good day to talk about a little bit about religion, and that's why all right, turn it off already with the DDD. I've given up on Indian food. I haven't had it for months. I can't eat it anymore. And the reason is because they use the lunch buffet food at night when you come in for dinner. I mean, it's $8.95 all you're going to eat for lunch, right? You come back at night, you figure the same smiley guy is going to be there. It's the same salad, rehashed tandoori chicken. You're better off buying a Safeway chicken for $8.95 and heating up potatoes. Anyway, so to go back to the religion thing, I asked the question. You know, if you were one religion and then went into another and then went back to your original religion, why? It's an interesting, it's a transition a lot of people go through. Does it matter? I mean, you know, is it an interesting question to you? I would think it is. If you listen to another person talk about it, like you were born Jewish and you became this, then you went back to Judaism. Or you're born Christian, you became this, then you went back to that. Why? Why'd you do that? There are many paths to God. I cannot believe for a moment that God would want only a single path. Fundamentalist Christians who called me every name under the sun, and I'm willing to accept that they're intolerant of my viewpoint, but the fact of the matter is, I believe that by saying only your way is the pure way, you're saying all the other people are less than human. You're saying they're four-fifths a human, and I can't accept that. I also respect people who are atheists. I think they're wrong. I think they're gambling, and they're going to be found out to be wrong at the end of the road. I certainly can't prove it. If I could, I would. But, again, I've been attacked for this. I guess I didn't expect it to happen again today, but it was inevitable that it would if I bring up religion. I may as well give you my religious perspective for whatever it's worth. It's one man's opinion. I want you to take a pencil in your head, and I want you to draw a circle. Can you do that? Draw that circle in your head? I'm very good at pictographic verbiage. I can have you understand things through pictures in your head. You drew a circle in your mind. Now draw a little circle in the middle of that circle. Now imagine that little circle is the tunnel to God. Now take lines from the big circle and draw them to the little circle. Okay? And those lines can represent any one of the principal religions on earth, whether it be Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, or Hinduism. I'm using the five principal religions on earth because they represent the majority of people. I recognize there is Zoroastrianism and other religions, but I would like to focus for the moment only on the five principal religions of the earth. And I would say that each of these religions are conduits to that tunnel to God, and that if people truly believe in their religion and they practice their religion and it brings them closer to God, meaning they can behave more godly and nicer to their fellow man, so be it. Okay, here's what's on michaelsavage.com. Over 1.2 million unique visitors every month and growing. From the Investor's Business Daily, they read the healthcare bill, and they said it didn't take too long to run into an uh-oh moment when they looked at it, because the House health care bill makes individual private medical insurance illegal. They read it. You didn't. Pelosi's lying. Read her lips. From the Hill, Blue Dog Democrats threatened to kill the health care bill. Yeah, sure, I'll believe it when I see them do it. Go Blue Dogs. A hospital is suing the state of Massachusetts over universal care. Why? The state's costly universal health care law is forcing the hospital to cover too much of the expense of caring for, you guessed it, illegal aliens and the poor. Byron York, Washington Examiner, says the Republicans missed their chance with Sotomayor because she was involved in litigation of the Puerto Rican Legal Defense and Education Fund. Oh, really? From the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, a quick-thinking 83-year-old man foiled a home invader when he escaped bondage and shot the bandit, rescuing his wife, son-in-law, and a 10-year-old girl. I guess the feds will, well, arrest the 83-year-old for defending himself and not calling for the police. What? Sotomayor ducks questions about gun rights. Oh, I'm just shocked. Lawyers and activist reporters are being killed in Russia. Ho-hum. Are you shocked by that? On the bottom of michaelsavage.com, don't miss the story about the fireman whose name, Frank Ricci, is on the lips of almost every senator in the Supreme Court nomination hearings of Sonia Sotomayor. He's the fireman who struggled to move up because he had dyslexia, and now he's being smeared by evil, degenerate liberals. It's unbelievable. You got to read how evil they really are. And don't miss the story about smoking in war zones. That's right. Crazy, insane liberals wanted the military to move towards a tobacco-free war zone. Can you believe this? The fat behinds sitting in environmental chairs around America are saying to our troops facing bullets, don't smoke? Well, Obama said troops can still smoke in a war zone. Go, Obama, go. That's on michaelsavage.com. Don't miss it.
Savage.